The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz.
U.S. Senator Steve Daines on the program tomorrow. Talking an awful lot about the election, but also the border mess that it is and the trouble it's causing all across the United States and simple solutions for that. So that's up on the program tomorrow. Welcome back here. Appreciate you joining us as Lawrence Grossfield is connecting us, connecting with us here. He's a cattle rancher from Big Timber, former state legislator, chaired the Senate Natural Resources Committee, previously served on the reserved water rights compact. So knows a few things about getting folk together and how important land is to this great state of Montana. Good morning, Lawrence. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine.
Appreciate you coming on. Laid down some of the groundwork for this earlier. I've appreciated the collaborative process. I think it's unique. This goes back. It's a long process. 2019. You know, what's the first thing that comes off your mind when you're trying to educate the public about the benefits of this Crazy Mountain Land Exchange? What is it that you want them to know right off the top?
Well, I think you know what it involves is a exchange of land. It also involves a trail that will be built about 20-some miles to add on to 20-some miles that are already there, and it'll make it a loop trail all the way around, total of 40 miles. And I know that 40 miles sounds like an awful lot to a lot of people to go on. But on the other hand, there's also a lot of people out there that like trails that are not used so much by so many people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in other words, they like it's kind of like a privacy thing.
They want to get 20 miles away from civilization. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, a lot of the people that were opponents and groups that were opponents to this, they didn't like that. But on the other hand, there's a lot of public members out there that do like that. Sure, it might take a few days, but to go around, you know, the 40 mile hike.
Do you have are there camping sites along that trail then? I would presume there are.
Well, there camping sites are just kind of open to wherever people wanted to stop and camp.
So nothing designated. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
This 22 miles of that trail is going to be built by the Yellowstone Club. That's part of their commitment here in this land exchange. Lawrence, talk about all the players that were involved here, because as we talk about land exchanges in Montana, we just get caught up, and a lot of them don't seem to move very far, and this one didn't move very fast either. But this one come together, and I'm curious as to why you think that did.
Well, that's right. It did involve, I think it involved four years, maybe even five. I can't remember, but it's been a process. It's been ongoing for a long time. And, as I said, the Forest Service was good to work with. They came up with, you know, a lot of issues that they wanted to talk about, but for the most part, They liked it, which of course is has to be part of the deal. So, you know, a hike like that, it's a very quiet hike. It's a very connection with with the land, with the mountains, and so on. And a lot of people really like that. So I'm not sure what else.
Well, want to know a little bit more about how the process was managed so that these groups, as you noted in an op-ed, and I referenced that earlier, where not everybody got what they wanted, but they all stayed engaged with the process. And, of course, it went through a court hurdle as well. It seems like we can't do anything with our public lands without certain entities, you know, throwing it in court for whatever purposes. I think they're nefarious in my mind. But talk about the groups, Lawrence, who got involved in this and how everybody managed to get on the same page to try and accomplish something here.
Well, of course, there were several landowners involved because one of the things this will do is there will be land exchanges. The Forest Service, I forget the exact numbers, but the Forest Service gets around 6,000, I think it is, yep. acres, the amount of land that the landowners get is only about, it's 4,000, something like that. So the Forest Service, in a way, gets a lot better deal than the landowners. But on the other hand, the landowners would like to see this thing go through. And it'll mean that they'll, you know, give up some land, but it'll also, they'll get some, not as much as the Forest Service, as I've said. There were seven or eight landowners involved and a number of other landowners that weren't directly involved, but were supportive of the process.
Let me ask this question, because I got a text message here, okay. And this is about production agriculture, because I noted earlier, I think a lot of big landowners are seeing, you know, there's challenges in producing off of their land, so they're getting pressure from development around the state, and it would be a tough call if I'm in those shoes. But the question here, and thanks for it, does the land exchange have any effect on agriculture? Can you preserve production agriculture through this land exchange?
I don't think it'll make a lot of difference. The lands that the Forest Service are getting are up a little higher in the mountains. But it'll end up being like 20 some square miles that are accessible to the public. I mean, the way it is now with the checkerboard land ownership, you know, they only get access to a very small portion of that without landowner permission. And of course, if they really wanted to go everywhere, they would have to have several landowners' mm-hmm. permission. But with this land exchange, what that will do is that it'll walk up about 20 square miles of Forest Service land that they don't need to, you know, stop and get permission for. I mean, it just opens it up.
Was that one of the reasons? There was multiple reasons that people wanted this land exchange. What were the hunting groups or the hunters? Because that's a different recreation opportunity than hikers. Totally different, so to speak. How is there hunting preserved in this land exchange?
Well, it's the same as any use by the public. They can get on the trail, but they don't have to stay on the trail once they're in what would be Forest Service land. They can go anywhere they want, and that includes hunters. That, you know, it would open up that much land to them, and to. In, you know, to hikers, to there's some fishing potential. It just
So the hunting
the land was not available really without landowner permission.
Yeah.
But now, since it's blocked up, that issue will go away.
You still ranch there, Lawrence?
Yeah, I'm not involved. My ranch is just a little bit south of this whole deal, so I'm not. I don't get more or less of anything from this deal. But I just think it's a good deal for my neighbors.
Yeah. So
not to mention the public.
And where are we at in this process? I know that it's survived a court case. I don't recall what the Ninth Circuit had ruled. I know a district court had released a lawsuit from a couple of groups there saying the Forest Service actually, did its job. I'm summarizing that. But where are we at in the process with it? I mean, when can we start as a public utilizing this new swap?
Well, it's still, I would guess it'll be between 6 and 12 months from now that there'll still be some issues that go on. And I don't know if some of the groups are going to challenge it. They might not. And there's a lot of people out there that really – really would like to go on a trail where there's not, hundreds of people every day that you're passing. So I think that it's a winner for really for everybody.
And final question here too. Why do you think it works? I mean, why did this work where other projects like this seem to fail?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, like I said, there has been litigation on this and threats of litigation by some of the groups that are not happy with it. They're not happy because maybe they think the landowners didn't give enough. There's always that sort of thing in any land exchange, in anything that the Forest Service is involved in. You got people that think, yeah, this is a great idea, and you got other people that say, well, geez, we want more than that. And at some point, everybody's not going to be pleased. But this, I think this, once this goes into place, the trail is built and so on, I think that a lot of people are going to be awfully happy with it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too. And again, I appreciate the process. I think it's unique and what we need to see more of in our government when we're trying to, do things on behalf of the public. Lawrence Grossfield, again, Big Timber Rancher, former state legislator. Thanks for working on this. And if people want more information, it's easy enough to go. It is crazymountainproject.com. And that's the Crazy Mountain Access Project, a group that was formed specifically for this. And it goes back to 2019. Crazymountainproject.com for more information. Lawrence, thank you. I appreciate that. Take care. And we'll be catching up with you down the road.
Okay, thank you, too.
All right, back with more final thoughts from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana.
Elections are right around the corner, and with recent changes to many election laws, it's more important than ever to know how, when, and where to vote. That's why AARP created a Montana Election Guide with the most up-to-date information on how to register, where to vote, the rules for early voting, and key voting deadlines. Stay informed so you can make your voice heard. Visit aarp.org/mtvotes. That's aarp.org/mtvotes. Paid for by AARP.
Hey, are you looking for a great place to stay when you're headed to Billings, Montana? Stay at the Boot Heel Inn and Suites in Billings Heights. Telephone number 406-245-2000. Seriously, whether you're driving a semi-truck, a pickup and a horse trailer, or your family car, the Boot Heel Inn has easy accessible parking, a hot complimentary breakfast, and free internet. Stay at the Boot Heel Inn and Suites. 406-245-2000.
We asked Miles Community College students why they chose MCC.
Hi, I'm Kylie Lewis, and I'm from Dillon, Montana. I chose Miles Community College because it's a lot more affordable than other colleges that I was looking at.
Hi, my name is Cody Acord. The original reason I chose Miles Community College was to further my education in horsemanship through an affordable program with a great instructor.
To learn more about Miles Community College, visit milescc.edu.
MCC. Start here, go anywhere.
Hi, this is Mark with the Montana Department of Revenue with a message for property owners. Spring is here and you'll soon be seeing our staff in the field to perform property reviews. It's not necessary to be present, but if you'd like to make an appointment to visit with us, or if you have questions about the appraisal process, visit mtrevenue.gov, contact one of our field offices, or call 444-6900. Thank you from the Montana Department of Revenue.
No matter how far you may go, there's always one just down the road.
Town Pump.
Ooh, pump it up.
Pump it up.
Add a little energy to your day. Stop by your local Town Pump. Grab a couple of 5-hour energy drinks, 2 for $5. Plus, Pump It Up members save an additional dollar, 2 for $4. Town Pump. Convenient and right down the road.
Have Senator Steve Daines on the program tomorrow. Went off yesterday on a number of things. He's certainly been talking about the border an awful lot, and that has a lot of impact for us as well. But one of the things that we're addressing this next week as well, Will Huffman will be joining us. He's the Vice President of Downstream Policy at the American Petroleum Institute. There's a couple of moves being made by the Biden administration, and they're doing it through policy, not through Congress, but just by waving a pen and changing things. One of them is the tailpipe emissions, and that is going to have a dramatic impact. They want to limit tailpipe emissions, I'll get into that in a little bit more in some other area as well, but that's going to force the public to buy electric vehicles. There's another mandate here again by 2032. They're forcing the majority of cars and light trucks to be electric vehicles by 2032. We've talked about this a lot. Completely electric is not the way to go. We don't have the materials for that globally. But there is materials for hybrids, and that's nobody's talking about that except Brandon from the Yellowstone Valley Electric Cooperative. Senator Daines got on and yesterday in a weekly conference and talked about that. We'll have comments on that. And he's talking, too, about truckers because, you know, the EV range for a truck is about 330 miles. And then they have to spend 3 hours to charge. A diesel-powered semi, that range is 2,000 miles in 20 minutes. At the pump. That makes a huge difference. We have to get it through the administration's head that we need reality. Just a large dose of it here in our public. We'll talk more with Steve Daines tomorrow. Thank you guys for being here today. Have a good one.
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.